The end of the article isn't the end of the story. The Journal podcast goes behind the scenes with reporters and covers everything from the Mormon Church's $100 billion fund to coronavirus. Listen to The Journal on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, August 5th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. In July, hackers broke into dozens of major Twitter accounts and used them to push a Bitcoin scam. In some cases, they also downloaded users' data and DMs. A few weeks later, prosecutors said a teenager orchestrated the whole thing. Our reporter Robert McMillan will tell us how he allegedly did it after these headlines. Talks between Microsoft and the Chinese video app TikTok are up in the air after regulatory roadblocks, and TikTok competitors are taking advantage of the chaos. More unknown companies like Byte and Triller are now working to convince popular TikTok users to switch to their platforms. And it looks like, in some cases, it's working. The apps are surging in the Apple App Store's rankings. The National Security Agency issued new guidance for military and intelligence community personnel on Tuesday, warning about the risks of location tracking through apps, wireless networks, and Bluetooth tech on cell phones. Our reporter Byron Tao has more.
The NSA has long been concerned about cell phones being used for surveillance by foreign governments and other adversaries. But the widespread use of this technology across the military and the ubiquity of these kind of devices in everyone's homes really has amped up concerns about the acquisition of this kind of data and the sheer amount of it that's out there available for sale from data brokers and other companies that make this stuff available on the open market. So I think the agency is really responding to the proliferation of these kind of devices and the increasing level of technology in our lives.
The NSA isn't the only government entity looking at data collection. The European Union's antitrust enforcer has opened an inquiry into Google's planned acquisition of the health tracker Fitbit. The over $2 billion deal was first announced in November to help Google further its push into wearables and health. But privacy advocates raised concerns. They didn't like the prospect of Google accessing sensitive health data, in addition to all the data it already has about its users from other products, like email and search. Google has pledged not to use Fitbit data for advertising purposes, but on Tuesday, the European Commission said that promise wasn't enough to alleviate concerns, and it launched an inquiry into the deal that could take months. The U.S. Justice Department is also reviewing the planned acquisition. Up next, we'll take you behind the scenes of Twitter's most high-profile cyber attack to date. That's after the break.
When the world is at a standstill, facts can move us forward. Facts help us make decisions and bring us together even as we're apart. The Wall Street Journal has the facts in these uncertain times. Get the latest on the coronavirus outbreak with free coverage of the crisis and its impact on the economy, politics, culture, and daily life. Find the clarity you need with America's most trusted news source. Visit WSJ.com and stay informed.
If you were scrolling through Twitter on July 15th at around 4 p.m., you might have started seeing a bunch of similar tweets from big accounts, from companies like Apple and Uber to public figures like Bill Gates, Kanye West, and Barack Obama. The accounts were tweeting out Bitcoin addresses, saying things like, if you send money, they'd send you back double. That was, of course, a scam and part of the biggest hack in Twitter's history. The immediate aftermath of a cyber attack, especially one this big, is usually pretty hazy. And at first, there were a lot of question marks. But now that we're a few weeks out, some of the smoke has cleared. Last Friday, federal prosecutors arrested a 17-year-old in Tampa, Florida, who they say was the driving force behind the attack. Here to explain what we've learned is our reporter Robert McMillan. Bob, thanks for being here.
Hey, Amanda.
So what do we know about how hackers allegedly got access to these accounts?
They talked their way in, right? That's the interesting thing about this. There was a technical component of it, but the really key breakthrough was a 17-year-old on the phone pretending to be the IT staff of Twitter and talking some employee there into doing something they shouldn't have done. That's called social engineering, and that's really at the heart of this hack. What they were able to do was basically start a password reset. So they got into the user agent systems, the systems that people at Twitter use to support you if you get locked out of your account and you really want to get back in and you forgot your password or something like that. They have ways of helping people recover their accounts. They hacked that system And then using that system, started doing password resets. And the really remarkable thing was they did password resets for not just nobodies like me, but for Elon Musk, Barack Obama, Joe Biden. I mean, really important blue, what they call blue checkmark accounts that should have been better protected.
And then, of course, we saw the hackers push a Bitcoin scam, access DMs, and in some cases, download users' data. Bob, like you mentioned, prosecutors are saying that a 17-year-old masterminded this attack, along with another teenager and a 22-year-old. So where could they have learned to do something like this?
Well, a lot of this started in, there are a number of forums online where people engage in what's called OG account acquisitions, shall we say. So there's actually a whole subculture of people who are very interested in single name, or better yet, single letter or single number accounts, because these are the kinds of, if you have the Twitter address like @6@Twitter, that means you're probably one of the first people to use the service, because those get used up very quickly. Like, Bob at Twitter, much as I'd love to have it, was taken when I registered my account there. So these are coveted accounts. This is a little sub-community of people that acquire them and sell them and buy them and are into them. And they have developed a set of skills to basically socially engineer Twitter into letting them take over the accounts. Now, most of the time when this happens, the account may have been forgotten or registered 10 years ago and never used. And nobody really notices if you take over some of these accounts. But in this case, everybody noticed.
Yeah, and this is something that's big in video gaming too, right?
Yeah, a lot of it started there. The Xbox accounts. If you're playing a video game, first-person shooter game against somebody, and you really want to get them, the best way to get them is to just take over their whole account. The account takeover as a internet phenomenon goes back even before video gaming. I mean, people used to do this on AOL as well, back when there were chat rooms there that people would frequent. So it's kind of a long-standing internet, let's call it trolling tradition, of taking over people's accounts as a way of one-upping them. And then it's just kind of mushroomed into this very diverse world where people do it for prestige reasons. People take over, it's evolved into taking over telephone numbers, and people from this community realize if you took over somebody's telephone number, you could take over their Bitcoin account and you could steal money. Law enforcement authorities say that there's been tens of millions of dollars stolen this way through something called SIM swapping. There's just like a whole bunch, a playbook of attacks that relate to this type of phenomenon, but it all comes back to social engineering. It all comes back to basically tricking user agents into giving you access to accounts that you shouldn't really get access to.
Okay, so they allegedly used that playbook in the Twitter hack. Do we know anything about their motives? Why go from sort of teenage pranks to a large-scale public attack like the one we saw on Twitter?
Well, money. I mean, that's been the phenomenon within this community over the last few years. They've been figuring out that they can not only get these cool-sounding accounts and bug their opponents online by doing account takeovers, they can actually make money doing it. And so the authorities alleged that this 17-year-old Graham Clark wanted to make money. He clearly was into Bitcoin, and his lawyer says he has several million dollars in Bitcoin in his possession. And this scam, I mean, it netted $117,000, which is not bad money for a 17-year-old. Unfortunately, it reminds me a little bit of the Austin Powers, $1 million kind of phenomenon, where if he had imagined something bigger, he could have probably made a lot more money. I mean, the opportunities for market manipulation when you control Apple and Uber's Twitter accounts are pretty staggering.
Yeah, and we should note here, Clark has pleaded not guilty. Let's talk about Twitter. CEO Jack Dorsey has apologized for the hack and said the company, quote, fell behind in its security measures. The company has also said in a blog post that it's beefed up internal security and that it's limited access to its internal tools and systems. Bob, now that we're a few weeks out from the attack, what have the implications been for the company? Like, what did this attack really show us?
Well, it's really shone a light on a problem with Twitter, which is that there are all these entities that really, people and companies that really depend on Twitter for their brand. And yet they have no control over the security of their Twitter presence. Like, that is a problem. There should be a way for a company like Apple to decide for itself who gets into the Twitter account and who doesn't. And it's maybe an opportunity for Twitter, which is looking for sources of revenue to provide something, right? To provide a way of granting access control to the actual Twitter account owners. But it's also a technical challenge. You know, when you start messing around with this kind of stuff, then you can introduce problems that then get hacked. So there may be technical reasons why Twitter hasn't done this, but I think that there are a lot of people, not least of which some people at the White House, who are hoping for better controls from Twitter over this stuff.
All right, our reporter Robert McMillan, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Amanda. Always fun to chat.
That's it for today's tech news briefing. As always, we've got more tech stories on our website, wsj.com, so check us out there. And if you like our show, please do rate and review us. It really does help. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.